This is Brett Kunkel, guest hosting for Stand to Reason, sitting in for my good friend Greg Kokel. And I got to say, it is good to be back. It's good to be reunited with my good friends here. And it's a privilege to sit in for my good friend and old boss, Greg. In fact, for those of you who have been listening to the podcast, you know that Greg is actually out because of some back surgery. And so thank you for praying for him. In fact, I have a little update from Greg. Greg says this. He says, thank you for praying for me and my surgery. The surgeon said everything went well and they completed all they intended to. Now it's time for recovery. Please pray the pain in my leg is gone. So thank you for your prayers for Greg. Hey, Greg, we're always happy. If you're listening out there, Greg, I don't know if you're laying in bed somewhere. But hey, we're happy to pray for your 87-year-old body. So no, wait, he's not that old, is he? No, keep praying for Greg that he would fully recover. I know when I've talked to him, it's a challenge traveling with that pain, and we want our friend and partner in the kingdom to heal up completely so that he can continue his effective work for the kingdom. So you get me today, and we've got a good hour ahead of us taking your calls, and I'm gonna make a few comments here, but before I do that, let me mention that if you have any questions or comments on religion, faith, values, culture, apologetics, whatever it might be, we're taking your calls. The number to call in is 855-243-9975. That's 855-243-9975. So give us a call, and I would love to chat with you. Gosh, I spent 14 really good years here at Stand to Reason. And man, it was, I look back on those years as so formative, as years that were very, very crucial in preparing me for the next work that the Lord had for me. And that was in, it's been over a year now. The fall of 2017, September 2017, I launched out like others have before me, like Scott Klusendorf, who launched out from Stand to Reason and started Life Training Institute. Jim Wallace, J. Warner Wallace, launched out from here with Cold Case Christianity. And about a year ago, we launched out to focus really on young people and the people who are discipling young people. And we launched Maven, a new nonprofit organization to help train up a new generation. And so this is a fun reunion to get to see all my friends here, but to sit in for Greg. But like I said, Maven is really youth-focused. And so, of course, I'm always thinking about how effective we are in reaching our young people. And you know, sometimes I'm careful in terms I want to be careful in terms of laying out the problem. I don't want to be simply alarmist to, to just to make a lot of noise and get attention for our work. I don't want to over exaggerate things. I just want a clear, sober assessment of where our young people are at, where the church is at in discipling our young people. And then go from there. And here's my sense. Over the last year, after, just spending a lot of time and really the last 25 years focusing on the discipleship of young people, I guess I want to say this, and I've been saying this more and more to parents and to church leaders. I really think that things are probably worse than we realize when it comes to the discipleship of our youth in the current cultural context. And I think there are a lot of evidence that we can cite for this. But I really think that parents and grandparents and church leaders and youth pastors need to wake up. I'm being serious. I'm being sober here. We need to wake up. I mean, I hear stories all the time that just seem to give evidence that our young people are being taken captive by the ideas of this world. I was just talking to a friend of mine. She does some teaching in the Bible Belt in Tennessee, and we were talking on the phone, I don't know, about a month ago, and she was talking about teaching some church kids. It was a high school youth group, I believe. She's teaching these kids. These are kids that have grown up in the church in the Bible Belt. And the topic she was addressing that night was transgenderism. And she was telling me that as she's dealing with this issue of transgenderism and kind of talking to these church kids about how to think, right? And this is someone who's been trained in apologetics, who's a worldview thinker, who's going to make some careful arguments, who isn't just going to, you know, throw out a "the Bible says so" kind of thing. She's making careful arguments, but she said the students in this high school youth group were getting mad at her. They were getting upset with her, and they were visibly upset with her because she was taking on this issue. And so this is just a little snapshot of the kind of thing I see with young people across the country. They are struggling to navigate the challenges of contemporary culture, to really know their faith well, and ultimately to stand courageously for Christ. And I got an email. Here's another. It's anecdotal, but it's another example of the kind of thing I hear all the time. This is an email I received from a father, who again is in the Bible Belt, and runs a business, he's actually now doing an MA in apologetics at Biola, the premier place to do your MA in apologetics. And he says this, I'm not a pastor nor in ministry. I'm a 53-year-old dad whose 25-year-old son, my best friend, told me 2 years ago he didn't believe in God anymore. That conversation changed my life. This same kid grew up in a Christian home, a Christian school, a vibrant church, a fantastic youth group, and went on more than 10 impactful mission trips at home and abroad. And then this dad asked the question, how could this have happened? What a sobering question. And he says, we are not immune here in the Bible Belt. And so here you have two examples, and think about the kinds of kids we're talking about here. We're talking about church kids. We're talking about kids that have grown up in the church. And in this example, from this dad, a son who was highly involved in a church, a youth group, sounds like a solid Christian home, went on 10 mission trips at home and abroad, and now has walked away. I think it's time for us to wake up. And I think we need to, sound the alarm a little bit louder. My sense is that we are in deeper trouble culturally than we even realize. And I've bounced this off of some other people, some smart guys, some wise men who I trust their assessment of these things, who are looking at culture. And I think for those of us who are paying very close attention to culture, there are many of us, I think, who are feeling the same sense that we're actually in deeper trouble than the broader evangelical church actually realizes. And I think those of us who are in the worldview space, who are thinking carefully about our faith, who are engaged in the apologetic endeavor, I think we're actually more equipped to see those kinds of things and those kinds of trends that maybe go unnoticed by, our brothers and sisters in the pew. And so I think we have to continue to sound the warning that it's the kids in our midst who are struggling. And our first priority is to equip and disciple them. Okay. Now, So what I want to do here for the remainder of my opener here is just lay out some resources. Because I'm always asked this question, what are the best resources? I have parents or grandparents or youth pastors who will say to me, okay, I get it. All right, I am awake on this. I know that our young people need maybe a different kind of discipleship. And help me. What are the best resources out there? So I want to spend a little time going through some resources. And this is the really practical part. I think we have a continual need to, those of us, working in the world of ideas, those of us thinking carefully about ideas and doing worldview stuff and apologetic stuff, we have constantly got to think about the practical side of training. And really help figure out how to take this stuff that we so deeply care about, and put it into very practical programs and resources and training opportunities. Okay, so let me give you some resources that I think are the best things out there. Now, I think we're in a situation. I think we're in a situation where probably. I thought carefully about this. I don't think this is an overstatement, but I would say probably the majority, if not the vast majority of kids that grow up in the church, I think they need a gap year program before they go off to college. If you're kind of doing the typical American culture kind of thing where your kids are going K through 12 in school. You know, they're going to church on Sundays, they're going to youth group, whatever they're involved. I think kind of that typical program, our typical evangelical churches, we just got to assume it's not going to equip them for the onslaught of challenges that they'll face. On the college campus, and I know it's pushed down. We're seeing those challenges on high school campuses and junior high campuses, even elementary school campuses. And so we've got a situation where, again, many of our young people, either they walk away even before they go to college, but definitely in college, or their faith takes a hit. They kind of retreat into into some kind of blind faith, or they are kind of quiet and silent and reserved and not boldly proclaiming the gospel. So anyway, the point is, I think that probably the vast majority of our young people need a gap year program. They need a year before they go off to college to be trained and equipped for that environment. And I know a lot of Christians don't like to use warfare imagery and language. I mean, look, Scripture uses it. Paul uses it. Paul talks in a number of places about being in a battle, right? The weapons of our warfare, he talks about in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And so sometimes I think in the kinder, gentler impulses of our Christian faith, we want to avoid that warfare language. And certainly that we have to be careful. People in the culture are not our enemies. People made in the image of God are not our enemies. False ideas are. But in order to send young people, I think, on the college campus, which is a battlefield, it is a battlefield of ideas. It is a battlefield of morality. As I just keep my finger on the pulse of the college campus, as I read what goes on and what young people are exposed to, I give you a resource on this, okay? You can go to campusreform.com, campusreform.com. And it's a news source that has this correspondence on just different college campuses all around the country. And you can just read the different reports, things that are being reported on, things that are happening college campuses all around the country. Okay, so I don't think it's an overstatement to say it's a battlefield. It is a battlefield for our young people. And just like we would never send soldiers into war without the necessary training, in the same way, I think that's how we have to think about it when it comes to our young people. We've got to think very carefully about how to best equip them. So we got to know that environment that we're sending them into. We got to know the nature of the warfare that they're going into. It's a battle of ideas. It's a battle of worldviews. And so we've got to give them good training. And the probably the best thing you can do for many of our kids is to get them into a gap year program first. And hey, maybe it adds an extra year to the college experience. Maybe there's a cost associated to it, but what's the alternative? And so let me give you a very practically. So here's the best, I think, the premier gap year program in Christian worldview in the country. It would be the Impact 360 Institute's Fellows Program. It's a 9-month program, and they take students through training in worldview, in philosophy, in apologetics, in worldview, and also in leadership. That's the one of the things that's, I think, distinctive about this program is they do leadership training, because the idea is that we're going to take these kids for this gap year, this fellows program, and we're going to equip them with the knowledge they need, but then we're going to also help equip them to become leaders so that they go onto the college campus looking for ways to lead and make an impact. And so that right there is something I think every Christian parent needs to look into. And you can simply go to Impact360Institute.org and find information about their fellows program. Okay, now, I know some of you are thinking, gosh, that's a 9-month commitment. That's a big thing to bite off and consider. So there are some steps to that. There are some other great resources out there. So let's go down a little bit in terms of commitment level. But let's take the best worldview camps out there. There are a couple of 2-week programs that I think are the best camps out there. And again, some of you are familiar with these groups because they are longtime allies of Stand to Reason. But one is going back to Impact 360. Impact 360 has an amazing 2-week worldview program called Immersion. And again, you can find all the details on that at Impact360Institute.org. But that is a 2-week worldview camp for high school students. So that one's just high school students, 9th through 12th grade. And it's a smaller camp. They limit it to about 60 students. And there's 2 weeks of just immersion in the Christian worldview. But they also do some very unique things where they will take students on some experiences throughout the camp. So you're doing the classroom stuff, but then you're also getting this stuff out of the classroom. And so, for instance, my good friend Alan Schliemann here at Stand to Reason, he comes out for 2 days and he does all kinds of training. But one of the things he does is he does training teaching on the topic of Islam. And then the Impact 360 sets up a field trip where students go to a mosque and they get to sit down and they get to talk with an imam. And they get to talk to Muslims and observe a prayer service. And so this stuff gets out of the classroom and into real life. So that's a 2-week program that every parent should send their students to in high school. And then, of course, our great allies at Summit Ministries have a 2-week conference, summer conference. There are 7 sessions in the summer. You can get all the information about the Summit conferences at summit.org, but that's a 2-week conference that is very similar to Immersion in that there's lots of classroom training. It's approximately 7 hours a day of classroom training where young people are challenged to think about how the Christian worldview impacts every single area of life. And so Summit Ministries does a great program, and of course, I always suggest if you get a chance to go to their their Colorado campus. It's in Manitou Springs, south of, or let's see, east, no, west of Colorado Springs. That is the place to go. They just have an amazing a campus there. So those are the two best, I think, 2 week worldview camps. Okay, you might be saying, well, okay, gosh, 2 weeks. That's a, again, it's an investment of money. Those are over $1,000 each. You know, maybe you got to fly out to Atlanta, Georgia, for the Impact 360 Immersion Camp, or you got to fly to Colorado or some of the other locations that Summit Ministry does theirs. Okay, it's a bigger investment. Okay, so let's go down one more step. There's a week-long camp. This is called this is a ministry called Faith Ascent Ministries, and you can simply go to faithascentministries.com, and they have a five-day program called Base Camp. And it's a worldview and apologetics training program. It is in the St. Louis area. So it's in the kind of the middle of the country there that you can get your kids involved in that program. That's just a five-day, and it's a great program. And that would be, I think, another alternative. Okay, so those are week or two-week programs. All right, how about the best worldview missions experience for students? Well, this is unique, and well, this is a shameless plug. There's only one place for that, and that's Maven. Our ministry, one of the things that we've launched and has been the thing about our ministry, I think, that has developed the fastest is our what we call immersive experience program. And if you're familiar with Stand to Reason, you know, you're familiar with this concept, but this is really where we do training with young people. In fact, what we have developed is a full training program that ultimately is put on a flash drive and sent to you and your ministry and your youth group or your Christian school is able to do this this training on their own. There's some requirements, but then we then meet you in a location like Berkeley, California, or we meet you in Salt Lake City, Utah, and we put together a week-long immersive experience where now you are engaging this material. You're engaging the truth. You are really, our young people are really learning their apologetic or their theology or the Christian worldview. And then they're seeing it in action. They're seeing it in conversation. We bring out atheist guests to challenge young people's faith. And then we do more training. We go and talk to Mormon missionaries. And it's just an amazing experience. And this is something that can be done with a youth group or a Christian school or whatever group you're part of. And it's a one of a kind experience. Okay, couple more resources for you. These are now, again, let's go down a little level here. You want a little, you're like, well, gosh, can't do the week thing. Or maybe I can't talk my youth pastor into doing the week thing. All right. Let's do how about a Friday, Saturday night thing? The best apologetic students conference out there is, you guessed it, Rethink Apologetics. Obviously, that's something I had the privilege of being a part of for years here at Stand to Reason, and it is exciting to see that program continue to expand. And so there are four locations, a new location opening this or next year. And all across the country, that is the kind of conference that's so well done. And the content is so relevant and important that that's the kind of thing you travel for. That's the kind of thing you save up for and you invest in a couple of plane tickets for you and your son or daughter. And you get them to a Rethink conference or you drive 6, 7, 8 hours. We've had groups do that before. And so that is a huge resource. We at Maven, we've started a new conference for young people as well. It's called the True Story Conference. We're doing our first one in January in Oxford, Mississippi. So if you're in the deep south there, come join us January 18th and 19th. And you can get information about that at truestoryconference.com. And some of you might think, well, gosh, okay, well, those are two apologetic conferences for students, and you're on Stand to Reason's radio show, and you're talking about your conference, but you're also talking about their conference. What about competition? if you think in terms of competition, my friends, when it comes to the kingdom, let me suggest, your values are misplaced. Look, when it comes to kingdom work, it's not about competition. It's about collaboration. We have got to have a spirit of collaboration. We have a huge task ahead of us. We don't need less student conferences and camps. We need more. We don't need less. We need more. And then lastly, this is going to be the last practical resource. I know I've been, been going here for almost 20 minutes. But there's a lot out there. In terms of, I get this asked all the time, what about curriculum? What do we do about curriculum? Honestly, I just have not found any curriculum that really makes me happy, that really satisfies me when it comes to worldview and apologetics and theology and really the knowledge of Christianity that young people need. There's just not good, great stuff out there. Maybe the best thing out there is something that Awana did in partnership with our good friend Sean McDowell. I'd take a look at that if I were you, but I usually tell parents and youth pastors, you know what, set aside curriculum. I think curriculum often is not effective. Instead, I think what's more effective, now it's harder to get started, especially if your young people aren't conditioned for this, but instead pick some good books, read them, and discuss them with the students, and let the book be the curriculum. So if I was working with a group of, you know, seniors in high school, I'm throwing out the curriculum, and instead what I'm going to do is I'm going to take them through a reading of Mere Christianity, or I'm going to take them through a reading of J.P. Moreland's book, The God Question, or I'm going to find a worldview book that is translated well to bring to our students and have them read it and then interact with it in discussion. And what my prep would be, instead of preparing some, curriculum, I'm reading the chapter as well. And then I'm just writing questions, and my questions are very specific. I'm creating open-ended questions. So that means these are questions that are not simply yes or no in terms of their answer. They are, open-ended so that students have to kind of talk a little bit and get their thoughts out. And that's I think, the better curriculum than any curriculum source out there. So I would say pick good books. And the added benefit to that is you're getting kids to read. We desperately need to get our young people to read. So, all right, so there you have it. We need to wake up. And guess what? There are some really good allies out there that we can take advantage of. And so I wanted to get those out there. Lots of good resources, and we need more. We need more of those. So wake up and let's start discipling young people. That is just, I'm passionate about it. Hopefully you hear that. Okay, I think we need to take a break here. This is Brett Kunkel, former star employee here at Stand to Reason. here back with my good friends, getting the privilege to sit in and guest host for my good friend Greg Kokel, who's out with back surgery. We're praying for you, Greg, and we will return in just a few minutes.
The Christian worldview is under attack. Its claims about truth, Jesus, morality, and the Bible are all being challenged by some of the toughest critics in the world. That's why I'm thrilled to tell you about Stand to Reason's Rethink Apologetics Student Conference. The Rethink Conference prepares middle school through college-age students to respond with confidence to their teachers, professors, and peers who seek to belittle their Christian beliefs. Join thousands of other leaders, parents, and students as some of the top Christian apologists spend an energizing weekend responding to the hardest questions Christians face. Visit RethinkApologetics.com to learn more and register today.
What does a silo of soybeans or an old 1987 Nissan truck have to do with apologetics? When donated, both enabled STR to provide Christians like you with the resources you need to gain confidence in defending your faith. STR's partnership with iDonate makes donating non-cash items easy. You can give personal items like vehicles, stock, jewelry, gift cards, and more. iDonate takes care of selling the items and gives the cash proceeds to STR. So if you're looking for a unique way to support the work of Stand to Reason, consider donating that random gift card Aunt Bertha gave you last Christmas. Simply go to str.org/donate and click the link at the bottom of the page.
You're listening to Stand to Reason. This is Brett Kunkel, guest hosting for Greg Kokel, who is recovering from back surgery. Surgery went well. Thanks for your prayers for Greg. Continue to pray for his recovery, and specifically pray that the pain in his leg will be gone. So I get the privilege of being with you today. Hey, we are taking your calls right now. So if you've got a question, a comment on anything dealing with the Christian faith, with morality, with cultural issues and challenges, with the church, hey, give us a call. You can call in at 855-243-9975. That's 855-243-9975. And love to hear from you, so give us a call. A couple of some announcements here. Hey, it's the end of the year, and so many ministries are dependent upon just the partnership with the body of Christ. And Stand to Reason has an amazing partnership with some wonderful people who are supporting this ministry and have actually offered a $230,000 challenge gift. And so your donations this end of the year go further with that challenge gift. So I want to encourage you, at the end of the year, when you're thinking about ministries to support, go to str.org and donate. Click on the donate button and support the good work that's happening here at Stand to Reason. Okay? All right. Well, I think we're going to... we got a call on line one. This is Alan in Illinois. And you guys are going to have to help coach me here. I got to remember, okay, I'm pushing a button here, but I don't want to push the wrong button. I don't want to hang up on Alan because he's been patiently waiting. I just got to push the orange button and I'm good to go, right? All right. I'm pushing a green button, this light. Okay. So the bottom button, I was just, one of the engineers here at Standard Reason suggested push the bottom button. And I'm looking at the bottom button and it says drop. And so I'm guessing that's that's not the button I want. Okay, because I don't want to drop Alan right here, but I want to get to Alan's call. He's got an interesting question. And I'm going to push another button here. There we go. Okay, Alan in Illinois, are you there?
I'm here, Brett.
Oh, success. Success. It's been over a year since I've been in this studio, so a little rusty here, but glad that you've been patiently waiting for us. So, hey, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, Brett. So I was recently listening to Gary Habermas in an interview with Scott Ray and the Sean McDowell show, I think biblically. There's a really, really, really great discussion about NDEs or near-death experiences. I know Greg's talked about it on the show, and it just kind of got me thinking. Gary's done some really great work around NDEs, and I find his work to be pretty compelling, and it's fascinating, and there's no real reason to doubt that these experiences that he's documented in his book, there's no reason to doubt them not to be real, which is really interesting. But then I was thinking, how do you reconcile that idea of the soul being absent from the body for even this period of time before it's reanimated, if you will? That there's a couple of scriptures that do talk about this. One is in 2 Corinthians in chapter 5 when it talks about to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And there's another one in Hebrews 9:27 that says, just as it is appointed for man to die once, and after that comes judgment. And in each of these passages, I don't know that it's necessarily talking about the process so much as it is a description of the occurrences. But I was just curious to get your take on that, to maybe flesh out a little bit. Where do you think the soul is in this state during a near-death experience?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I actually had the privilege of hearing Gary at ETS this year, the Evangelical Theological Society. He was doing a paper on near-death experiences. And in particular, he was just going through the different accounts and looking at the corroboration, the more well corroborated accounts. And so it was a fascinating conversation. I think the first thing to do on this would be to take a look at the passages. And I think probably the more relevant passage is the one that you suggested, I think, first, which was 2 Corinthians chapter 5.
Right.
And so I think what we want to do is make sure we don't, you know, we're looking carefully at the passage and not necessarily assuming more from the passage than mm-hmm. is there. And so kind of if I were to clarify the question, it might be, well, is the 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 8, when it says, kind of when there's this phrase, being absent from the body is present from the Lord, is that giving us, I mean, certainly it's not giving us a comprehensive account, and it's
right.
not, it's not even laying out kind of an account of the how, right? And uh-huh. And so if we're looking at the context, it might be just helpful to read through some of that, but just looking in the beginning of the beginning of chapter 5, verse 1, for we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. Meanwhile, we groan, longing to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, because when we are clothed, we will not be found naked. For while we are in this tent, right, referring to the physical body, we groan and are burdened because we do not wish to be unclothed, but to be clothed instead with our heavenly dwelling, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. Now the one who has fashioned us for this very purpose is God, who has given us the Spirit as a deposit, guaranteeing what is to come. And then we get into verse 6. Therefore, we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we live by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So we make it our goal to please him, whether we're at home in the body or away from it, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due us for the things done while in one body, whether good or bad. So it just seems to me that I don't think you can draw from this passage, I don't think you can draw the implication that the immediacy of that, it says nothing about the kind of the time frame. So
no, I agree. And you read the NIV version,
yes,
which I have in front of me as well. And what I was drawn off of was the language of the King James version, which I like to look at multiple of these to see how mm-hmm. the translation comes out. And verse 8 in the King James says, we are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. And I don't think it changes much of that dynamic there in the scripture, because like I said, it's not really talking about the process of death and what it is, but it seems to give at least a cursory indication that you're in one of two states. You're either in the body or you're in the presence of the Lord. But clearly something else is going on here.
Yeah,
as it would seem.
Well, I think you bring up a good point here in looking at some different translations. And typically what I look up is New American Standard, and I actually it was a little bit of an accident to read out of the NIV, but that's okay. I read out of the NIV. You read out of the King James, right? Not the New King James.
Yeah, I got both here.
And then I'm looking it up on the New American Standard translation, which is a more of a literal translation.
Mm-hmm.
And the verse 7 and 8 say, for we walk by faith, not by sight. We are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. So there's a little bit of a variation there.
There is.
With the word prefer, we prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be home with the Lord. So I guess my first observation would be, and just not having given this issue a ton of thought, but my first observation would be it seems to me that we're not forced into the situation from this text where we have to say, okay, well, there's an immediate, once there's death, then there's an absolute, an immediate departing of the body to go be in the presence of the Lord for the regenerate believer. Mm-hmm. But then also, the I think part of the question might be defining what death is as well, right?
Right.
And now, what's interesting, and this is probably related to your question here, is some of the accounts that Gary gives, right, when he in his work on these near-death experiences, in some of these accounts, you have people who find themselves kind of floating above their body. That's kind of their perspective. They're above their body, or even they. He mentioned one account where this person is in a hospital, and they die, and they kind of float really through the ceiling and the floors, and then find themselves kind of above, being able to have a perspective on the roof of a hospital building, and then seeing a particular colored shoe on the roof of that building, and then being brought back, and then being able to report on that. So there's the situation where, yeah, what's going on there? Are they absent from the body, but they're not present with the Lord? But I think, in terms of the particular issue of being in conflict with this text, I don't think that's necessarily the case.
I don't think so either. It was just what sort of sparked the question, not so much what is the conflict with the text, so much as what state are they in that phase?
Yeah.
Where are they? And I think just to expound on the question a little bit, I guess I have always held the idea that I've never been much of a believer in ghosts defined as a human soul that is displaced and confined or contained within the earthly realm. And that is sort of, it almost leads, these NDE experiences almost lend themselves to that kind of a experience. And I'm not sure how to reconcile that conceptually.
Yeah, well, I think one thing when we talk about NDEs, and one thing to think about is what follows from these accounts, right? We want to think about what this argument proves and what how far we can kind of take this argument, because I think there are some Christians who want to say, hey, you got you have the I think it was the Heaven Can Wait kind of story. I think that's the book with the young child.
Yeah,
you have these accounts where they go to heaven, they see the Lord, whatever, they may report talking to Jesus or old relatives, and then I think some Christians uncritically will take those things as, here you got a powerful experiential argument for, the truth of Christianity. And I don't think that is what we want to do with NDEs. I think we want to
I think NDEs is more about evidence of the existence of the soul.
Yes, exactly.
More than anything else. But it definitely brings up some extra questions to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, so there are other things we can speculate on. But I think for those who are listening and kind of who maybe don't have a ton of experience with kind of NDEs and want to know, well, what's the argument from the NDE? I think you're right. What the argument from the NDE is that, and it's a more modest argument, it's not that Christianity is true, but this is just evidence that we are more than material beings, right? And that that we are dualistic beings, that we have a soul. There's some kind of unity between the physical and the non-physical, the soul. But the soul is a separate substance. And so it's part of our cumulative case that we want to make. So
it's an interesting thought to think about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think I think, and at least in the way the the initial question is worded, how do we reconcile this? Well, I think, it certainly can be, it can be reconciled with the Christian worldview and our view of the afterlife very easily. Now, remind me, Alan, what's the pressure point there that you said you're struggling with?
It's not so much a pressure point so much as it is simply a curiosity to understand what is the state of the soul. I guess it's from a presupposition that once you die, you're immediately in the presence of God. That's just an assumption that I have always held. And so if the soul separated from the body is present on earth for some period of time, we don't know how long because these NDEs don't tend to last very long based off of the evidence that, people like Gary Habermas have brought forward. Well, where is that soul? What is it doing hanging around and why is it coming back?
Yeah. Yeah. And
does that
and
make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that raises a question of how, and I'm not sure. I don't think we have any account of the how in Scripture, but how is that soul ushered into the presence of the Lord?
Right.
This might be one of those questions. When it comes to the accounting for this kind of thing, I'm not sure we have a lot of data.
We do have a couple of Old Testament accounts, I think, of saints being taken up into heaven, in a chariot, things of that nature, which might suggest that there is some journey, perhaps.
Yeah, and it might suggest that the prerogative lies with God as well.
Right.
And so, so in his foreknowledge, if he knows that this person is going to come back, then there's not, and maybe an ushering of the soul into his presence. But
perhaps not.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think there's. There are a few things here and there that hint at some of this stuff, but that don't give us any kind of comprehensive account.
No clearer direction.
Yeah. No, but they're fun things to think about. So
they are.
Yeah. But the argument itself is, I think, powerful evidence that we are not mere material beings. And in fact, I loved it. The presentation I was at at ETS with Gary in November. I liked how he had broken up some of the categories, but what he wanted to look at was not just any NDE, but let's kind of put some higher kind of controls on this, or some more stringent controls, and look particularly at the NDEs, near-death experiences, that had external corroboration. So it wasn't just someone coming back and giving a first-person account of what happened to them and saying, this happened and this happened and this happened, but also, were they able to give any detail that could be externally corroborated? So were they, in fact, he gave an example of someone who had so this kind of a strange ability to memorize numbers, and so they die, they have this near-death experience where they are able to see the top of one of the medical machines, I think, that was in the room, and they memorize this, like, serial number, and to come back, they end up sharing this, and it's corroborated that the number that they saw in this near-death experience was the accurate number that was on this machine. I mentioned the example of the shoe, and things like this where there's external corroboration. And so those then, I think, do provide some powerful evidence that that we are dualistic beings. So anyway, Alan, thanks for the call. Thanks for speculating with me on that. Are we going to take a break? Can we take a break? We need to take a break. I need a little break. I got to get a drink of water here. I'm Brett Kunkel. And I have the privilege of sitting in for my good friend, Greg Kokel. You are listening to Stand to Reason.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come speak at a location near you? If so, just send a quick email to darcy@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To learn more, just go to str.org and click on the training tab at the top of the page.
Hi, my name is Alan Schliemann. Does it matter what gender identity we choose for ourselves? Find out my answer in this month's episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud. Look for it on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Stand to Reason. This is Brett Kunkel, back here at, I guess, my old haunts, stomping grounds, whatever you want to call it, my old work, with my good friends here at Stand to Reason, my partners in the kingdom, who I spent 14 good years with, and sitting in for Greg, who's recovering from back surgery. We're praying for you, Greg. And we got a few minutes left here. I had an interesting conversation. Oh, I want to make one announcement here. At the top of the hour, I talked about just training young people and some practical resources that and the resources that I gave were resources for the students. But I think the flip side of this is we have to also help equip our parents and our youth workers. We have to help equip people who are discipling the next generation. So I want to give you a good resource on this. For those of you who are, whether you're in Southern California or outside of California, I think this is the kind of conference you can travel for. Our organization, Maven, is hosting the Maven Conference, and it is March 22nd and 23rd. You can get all the details at Maven Conferences. Yes, that's plural, mavenconferences.com. And we will be having John Stone Street, J. Warner Wallace, and Jonathan Morrow, myself, and others there, really trying to help equip people who are discipling young people. So this is a conference for parents, grandparents, youth workers, homeschoolers, Christian educators, pastors. We want you to take a look at that. Go to mavenconferences.com. Okay, we just got a few minutes here. Before the end of the hour, I got one last call here. It's Laban in Kansas. And Laban, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great, doing great. Hey, last week I heard Greg do the Challenge Grant announcement.
Uh-huh.
And I want to congratulate y'all about the... Yeah, for using that term instead of matching.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, as Christians, if we are giving grace giving, where's the grace in saying, if you'll give this, then I'll match it? You know, like, they ought to be giving it anyway. and so I appreciate that you're honest, that you have some generous people who are giving anyway. And they're just challenging other people to match it.
Well, thanks for that affirmation. And
yeah,
yeah, and I think that's a commitment of people who support this ministry, right?
Yeah, it's honest, by golly.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing in a Christian ministry.
Well, and we can never encourage enough cheerful
sure.
giving. I
sure.
think that's a good word, Laban. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. You know, verse 7, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Now, you could make the argument that those kind of matching gifts are not doing it for compulsion, but, you know, just challenging people. But, good comment.
There was another thing. I liked the comment, your comment just a little bit ago about these are fun to think about, the near-death experience things. I always think of the guy that the story was that so often you hear, it was all sweetness and light. Mm-hmm. And the story of the guy that almost died and there was a door and he put his hand up on the door and it was hot. And he said, nope, I don't want to go there. And so he came back.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. No. So, and you know, like you say, that kind of first-person thing, it's not really verifiable. But that one, I think, is fun to think about, too, at a good balance to the others.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And this is where, I mean, this is an area where not a lot of people apologetically have done a ton of work. I mean, really, Gary's kind of at the forefront there, but it's a fascinating topic. It's actually, I think, a great doorway to get people involved in apologetics, and because it is fun to think about, but it's also fascinating to hear these things. And the first person accounts where you have an external corroboration are interesting. It doesn't mean that they're not true or veridical, but we just don't have external corroboration for some of these things.
Yeah.
But the ones that do have external corroboration are pretty amazing and certainly give us evidence for the afterlife. But now, one thing that Gary had mentioned in his talk, which I think is important for Christians to think about, is what, you know, these alternate accounts. Well, someone goes to hell, or someone who said, I had a Buddhist experience, or I had something that was you know, consistent with Islam. Well, what do I do with that? See, therefore, you can't just take these and show that these are proof of Christianity. Well, that's right. That's why we want to be careful to be modest in our claims in the arguments that we make. But near-death experiences certainly give us evidence that there is more to life than this physical body. Well, thanks for joining us for this hour. This is Brett Kunkel sitting in for Greg Kokel. You have been listening to Stand to Reason.